Well, first and foremost, I want to certainly thank Chef Doherty for his presentation. I tell you, talking through the passion that he certainly exhibits and all the things that he's done, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I don't know, Mark, we've been in plenty of packing plants. The next time I go to a packing plant, if I had somebody hold a 12-inch knife to my chest, I don't know, I'd be real excited to go back there next time. But no, certainly good things to be seen there. Going ahead, my topic today is the business side of beef, which is kind of a scary topic from the standpoint of I could go a bunch of different directions with this. But kind of wanted to give a slight overview of first and foremost what does the 50,000 foot view of the beef industry look like, the business that we all live in day to day, and then obviously drill down a little bit more, talk specifically of where CAB is fiscal year to date, and then kind of take you a step further and talk end user, specifically on the retail side. Probably the piece that we get a little bit further removed from in terms of ultimately that end user. Obviously, we'll hear from Kip Palmer here a little bit later in regards to food service, but kind of want to focus a little bit more on retail. Now, I do want to show you, obviously, my background here at Raleigh Farms. I know it's one of our tour points. This is certainly something that we've started to do more and more as we try and relate that customer to our producers, to our rancher members, right? More and more this localitarian, I believe, is the term for it. They want to know where their food comes from. And meet the faces and the families behind this. And this is certainly an example of one of the things that we do. We had a ranch tour out there at Raleigh Farms, and shoot, that's probably been close to a year ago. I know many of the folks here in the room have been gracious enough to host different events, be different parts of different campaigns, and certainly, again, try and put a face with Certified Angus Beef and try and put a face with the Angus Association and ultimately the people that are driving and producing that product that so many people get to enjoy. Well, Scott, am I missing something? Right arrow? Getting nothing. We might be manual here. So just again, as we look at truly where the industry has gone, where it's come, what a difference a few years makes. Wasn't that long ago that live cattle were sub 90. I managed to meet Science Laboratory there at Ohio State for a few years. I remember when cattle crossed 90 cents. I had to buy live cattle for 90 cents and about broke the bank. Couldn't believe we were paying 90 cents for cattle. And now look where we are today, obviously 50% above that, $1.26. And who knows where that thing's heading here fourth quarter. But we'll certainly see that thing escalate for sure. Feeder cattle obviously up 72% since 2009. Call cows up 80%. And corn up 85. So certainly a lot of things have changed in just a short number of years. As we look at truly where the cattle industry sits, we can see that our total cow numbers are down sizably. They're on the far right column looking at 2012, numbers versus 2012 versus 2011. We can see, again, sizable changes in the amount of total cows and the total amount of beef cows. Replacement heifers slightly up there. And as we look at cattle on feed, this would be the January 1 data. It doesn't obviously include the cattle on feed number just released here for July that obviously was fairly bullish in regards to what the market will react to. But again, this is no news to anybody in this room. I'm sure you guys obviously live this day in, day out. But just kind of want to paint that picture of where the industry is today in regards to, again, 50,000 foot view total beef cattle. As we look at the cattle inventory, and this is a slide I borrowed here from Randy Blocks. This is, I guess, my Randy portion of the presentation, if you will. But kind of looking at where we were 2013, obviously downsizably. 2014 projection is to be flat at best. I think maybe we'll start to see this thing start to slowly rebuild, but obviously drought conditions, as we get more moisture, that's certainly influencing a lot of that, and especially as we get out into the Midwest, starting to see some beef cow replacement numbers starting to bring that number maybe slightly back as we move forward there. As we look at the total slaughter, again, downsizably, and this is, again, no news to the folks here. Down nearly a million head in 2012. 2013 is projected to be about a half million. We might slightly beat that, but nonetheless, you can see the trend line there from 2000 all the way to 13. Just a sizable decrease in terms of the amount of fed cattle that we have in our total population. So what does that all come to? And obviously, again, we've been living this. We've seen a feedlot industry, obviously, over capacity and continuing to shutter more and more feed yards. I think the really big point in time, we had not too many years ago, Emporia shut down for Tyson. And that was really one that kind of maybe started to start this trend of showing the fact that we are so over capacity, both in feeding sector and in the packing sector. But then, obviously, Cargill, I think for years we've been talking that Plainview would probably be the next one to go. And then I think they put about a $40 million broiler in like 2 years ago. So everybody thought, well, maybe they're around for a while. And then, obviously, lo and behold, they do shutter that plant as well. So tremendous impacts there, not only as we talk about the total cow numbers and what that's done to both the feeding sector and obviously the packing sector. So what has that yielded? Live prices, cutout prices, everything at record levels. And as you can see, this is a bit of a busy chart. So I apologize here for the busyness, but I imagine this crew's probably pretty used to seeing some pretty intrusive bar graphs. But nonetheless, as you look here, we've got the CAB cutout on that red line, kind of obviously escalating pretty sizably relative there with the choice line. And then those bar graphs are fed cattle numbers. So obviously moving in unison there, saw a sizable increase there in 2010, which, as we know, coincided with where the drought really started to hit. As we look at the front month now, October futures at 127, that was, I think I pulled this together like Thursday, so I'm sure it's kind of moved up since then as that cattle on feed number moved up. But again, just trying to paint the picture of where the industry is, 50,000 foot view. Less cows, and they're more expensive. More expensive. So let's talk a little bit closer in then, and stuff that certainly resonates with this crew is we're certified Angus beef. How are we doing? We've got these certainly a decreasing cow supply, decreasing fed supply. What does that ultimately yield? Are we able to still deliver on that product, that promise? So first and foremost, kind of want to talk through what does it take, just a brief overview on CAB. As we look at the chain, the supply chain, and you're going to have to click through quite a few here, I apologize, Scott. But, we have roughly a 60%, 65% fed population that would be considered black-hided. We move those to the packing plants, and again, as terms of our licensed packing facilities, we have the major four certainly licensed there at that point in time. And that's where we're going to start to evaluate those carcasses. So we start to look at those 51% black-hided and evaluate those 10 carcass specifications and ultimately stamp those carcasses CAB for the qualifications. Put that product in a box. How many pounds of that product, of that carcass, ultimately ends up in a certified Angus beef box and then finally ends up at a retailer food service entity at the end. So in terms of that that fed supply, obviously, the first step to becoming CAB, Angus type, 51% or greater black hide. Obviously, we've got the Angus source piece in there, but about 63% of total fed population will qualify for this. One thing that we certainly like to drive home with a lot of the folks that we visit with is the fact that there is no premium for a black hide. There's no grid that pays for a black hide. I should, grid, not necessarily on the live side, but there's no grid that pays premium for black hide. It's once we hit that next layer, the second step, which hits those 10 specs that ultimately we start to see those grids being paid out. And as we work through there, obviously, again, this crew probably more familiar, modest degree of marbling or higher, that's the big key as we get into A maturity, neck hump height, really, and also in terms of that marbling, wanting to make certain that it's fine textured marbling. Again, these are science-based specifications that we had established back in 78 with the help of Dr. Bobby Van Stavern, really trying to identify that, what's that product, that endpoint in mind, what do we have for carcass specifications that are going to hit that. Consistent sizing, 10 to 16 inches of ribeye, and then also the desirable appearance. We want a beef-type animal, free of any capillary ruptures, and also free of dark cutting. So those are the qualifiers. And again, we all are pretty familiar with this. But as we look at these, and we certainly are doing a tremendous amount of evaluation, trying to distinguish where does cattle start to fall out? And I think it's not a big surprise that the vast majority of cattle miss because of marbling. That's 500 degree of marbling, modest degree of marbling or higher. So as we look, this is a consist study that we're continuing to run. So as we look back in 2008, we evaluated the carcasses that would come through a packing facility that missed the brand. 94% of the time, it was because they didn't have enough marbling. And again, this is on A-stamped or Angus-type cattle. Now, as you go through here, I'm certain there's a couple people probably looking and saying, man, that adds up to more than 100%. Some cattle obviously hit more than one defect. Maybe they missed because of marbling and also because of ribeye size, something of that sort. So this number will total more than 100. But nonetheless, as we can see, that's been a pretty consistent number there. 94 to 95% of the time, changing several years there. Haven't seen a big shift in terms of the amount of cattle that have missed out because of marbling. Still by far the number one spec that eliminates cattle from our brand. Now as we look though, the one that's certainly starting to jump forward is this hot carcass weight of 1,000 pounds or greater. And I think probably not a big surprise to you folks here, but as we can see, a sizable increase in that spec in terms of eliminating cattle from our mix. Dive down a little bit deeper into the ribeye area. You know, as you get bigger carcasses, obviously ribeye area is certainly on the top side of that going to become much larger. And you can see as we've broken that out, that 10 to 16 inches has really eliminated quite a bit more cattle. And by and large, on the top side versus the bottom side of that. Back fat, obviously, is kind of is moving downwards in terms of its importance. In terms of eliminating cattle. But again, just showing you a breakdown of where the specs come into play and ultimately what their determination is within our product mix. Mentioned hot carcass weight, and that's certainly something that has been a hot button item here over the past few weeks, especially in past year. But you can see what this trend is. Dating back here to 99, you know, we're averaging close to 770, 780. Both the fed line, which is our blue line here, blue bar, and then CAB. We typically track anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds above the fed population. And as you can see in these past few years here, especially starting about 2010, we've really seen that explosion of hot carcass weight. And again, speaking to where that 1,000-pound hot carcass spec has really started to come into play and eliminate more and more cattle. The upside of these heavy cattle, in 2012, and we actually were down in terms of our certified numbers. You know, we just talked about the total amount of cattle that were available to come into slaughter being down sizably. We're down nearly a quarter million or slightly over a quarter million head relative to the year prior. So if you figure our average carcass utilization of 250 pounds per head multiplied by 230,000 head, that's close to 57.5 million pounds of certified Angus beef less that would have been available on the market.